All right. Do you perform any, like, more traditional community service or outreach stuff other than... aforementioned things?
Well, we haven't as of yet. We've only been in formation since 2017, so about a year and a half-ish, almost 2 years probably. But that is, we have thought of some of that stuff, right? Like doing Habitat for Humanity volunteering, or doing a clothing drive, or collecting, you know, funds to give food to put out, or Christmas drives, that kind of thing. We haven't actually done that as of yet, but it is in the works.
All right. And can you talk more about your classes and educational programs and how important they are to the overall practice?
Absolutely. So we have a year and a day training program that everyone has to go through when they first join. Some people decide to start that year and a day program and then join halfway through or join at the end, and that's fine. It's not that you have to join and wait a year and a day. It's that we want you to go through this training first, because we want to see that it's something that you're actually interested in. It's not a Hollywood thing you're going after. You don't want to be shooting fireballs out of your fingertips, right? And also because we want to make sure that other people in the covenant protect us, because we do have to be secret about our faith. No one wants to lose their job because they're not a Christian. So technically, most people in that year and a day are not allowed to go to a full coven meeting. There is one for them, and they do essentially the same things. They just don't see many of the other members, usually. And that's not even for the full year and a day. That's probably the first couple months, until we realize, you know, okay, this is a good person. They're not in this. They're trying to hurt anybody. They can come in, right?
Do you get a lot of young people? There's a trend within which of people being like, I want to spite my parents and do something different.
Well, we've had a few people who are young. We don't allow anyone under the age of 16 to join the coven without a signed parental... Well, okay. If they're under 16, they have to have the signed parental consent letter, and their parent has to be with them at every event they attend. If they are 16... to 18, 16 to 17 and 364 days, right? They can have that parental permission slip and be there without their parent, but they have to have that slip saying that it's okay. So yeah, we have had a few young people, but we've had some who said, oh, my parents won't sign the slip. Well, I'm sorry, you can't be in that, you know, when you're older. Because the last thing we need is some parents to say, you're teaching our kids the devil, and then,
yep,
you know, we get in trouble. We don't want that. Even though we're not doing anything illegal or harmful, you know, it's just like if they went to a church, they could go there, but they can't come to our church because we're not Christians.
Makes sense.
Does it, though?
Well, no, but... people are still judgmental.
Yes, very much so.
Have you faced a lot of discrimination? Is there a, like, strong feeling of having to hide your faith?
Absolutely. So I do not talk about my faith at work. I do not talk about my faith to strangers, typically. Usually, if I am around my hometown or anywhere near my place of business, I do not wear my pinnacle out. I wear it, even though it's a symbol of protection, I'm supposed to wear it all the time. I wear it under my shirt. At one of my previous jobs, everyone in senior leadership was so Christian that one employee was suspected of having done something wrong, even though there was proof later showing that that employee did nothing wrong. But when it was suspected, the leadership told that employee, we want to pray for you. Right. And so in that company, I did not want to be fired because I wasn't a Christian. And so they would invite me to Bible studies and things, and I would tell them, oh, I appreciate it, but, you know, I'm busy that day, or I can't, you know, whatever. But I shouldn't have to do that.
Right. What are your daily experiences with the religion like? Do you practice daily, or is it mostly just when you gather for spells and rituals?
Nope, it's every day. Yep. Every day I pray at sunrise, so I'm up 365 days a year to greet the sun. I pray throughout the day, obviously, too. That's not the only time. But I will daily do things like read tarot cards, read my pendulum, practicing casting runes. That's new for me. I haven't done that one very long yet, but practicing that one. collecting herbs, tending my garden, growing the herbs that I'm trying to grow, right? Studying. I read all kinds of books about the old faith, a lot of which are written by Christians at the time. So it's, you know, has to be read with a grain of salt.
Yes.
But every day I'm doing something.
Has your behavior changed based on the group's ideals? I mean, they're kind of your ideals. You started
yeah.
it, but...
Yeah, no, they haven't. They're the same.
What kind of practices are involved with being a member of the group? Any rituals or ceremonies you want to talk about?
Sure. So our wedding ritual is called a hand fasting. There is some idea out there that hand fasting was just like a trial marriage, like a betrothal, and that it wasn't really a wedding. Well, it was. I mean, that's what it was. That's what it was. That's what it is to us. So when we say hand fasting, we mean legal wedding, right? That's a whole ceremony for us. There's a ritual for requiems when someone passes away. We try to help guide their spirit to the other side. We have whole rituals for our normal monthly meetings, the S-Bots we call them. Each Sabbath has its own, each of the 8 holidays has its own ritual associated with it. We have rituals for naming someone. We have rituals for if there's a storm, how we can use that storm to cleanse around us, right? We do certain rituals on rivers and lakes periodically just to make sure they're taken care of. We leave offerings almost daily. We leave some kind of offering for something. You know, we're constantly cooking food and leaving it out, or collecting stones and leaving them in certain patterns, or etching runes onto things to protect them. I mean, we do rituals all the time.
What kind of art forms are present? Any visual symbols, music that are used in rituals or other activities?
We have written a few songs. I've wrote a book. I guess you can consider that artistic in any way. We have everyone in the coven does something that they provide to the other coven members for free. Even if that's just, I want to do a tarot reading for someone. But some people are seamstresses or seamsters. Either way, you know, they sew things. They'll make ropes and sashes and cords for our uniforms. Some people will make altars out of wood or stone. Some people make beautiful carvings or paintings and give those out. And we have all manner of things that we do. We have a tattoo artist.
Wow.
Obviously, they have to practice in certain conditions and in their shop and all that stuff. You know, they don't break the law, but we have one.
How do members of the group interact with other members of the general public?
Just like anybody else does. Except most of us hide our faith, so people don't know who we are.
Do you have interactions with other religious organizations?
Mm-hmm. Yep. In Topeka, there's a group called the Topeka Interfaith Organization. There's representatives from all kinds of religions. Paganism, Buddhism, Taoism, Christianity. And they meet a few times a year to discuss being accepting of other faiths. And so we'll work with them. I regularly meet with Christians who try to prove me wrong. You know, some of my close friends who know what I believe. I had one try to logic me through a conversation, and at the end of the conversation said, "Quit trying to make me a pagan." And I said, "I'm not. You started it." So, I mean, we have those interactions frequently.
Nice. Are there issues within the coven involving conflict or just personal interactions, and how are things resolved?
Mm-hmm. So that's all written in our bylaws. Essentially, we try to solve things at the lowest level. So if I have a problem with you, I would address it with you, talk to you first. But if I feel like I just can't, then I would bring it up to a priest or priestess or the high priest or priestess of my individual coven. If it has to go beyond that, if it goes to what we call the Council of Elders, then essentially, that each younger coven has its own council of elders, which would be both priests and priestess, or, you know, whatever mix they have. There's two of those, and then the one high priest or high priestess. So those three people make up the council of elders for each younger coven, as well as the elder coven has the same. But the council of elders at large is all of those for every coven. And so if it's a big problem, which it's never been before, but we're prepared if it ever happens, then it'll be addressed by a vote of the elder coven at large. Or the Council of Elders, George, excuse me.
All right. But you've never had to, like, remove a member or...
No. Nope, not really. We have had a few spats which resulted in people leaving, but never, like, anything crazy.
All right. How is the group governed? Do the elder counselors, like, council members make decisions? Or do you have committees?
That's the committee. Every month, or every quarter, excuse me, the Council of Elders meets. When they do meet, the members of the coven are allowed to attend. They can show up, but they don't get a vote. So for voting on, we have these things called orders, and those orders are just basically either awards or interest groups. So if we're thinking about either forming a new order or inducting someone into an order, that'll be decided by... If it's an award, by the Council of Elders. If it's an interest group, then by whoever runs that order, right? I know that's kind of weird, but we can get more into that later if you'd like. But essentially, we would talk about it, and other coven members can give their opinion. They can speak, but ultimately, they can't vote. The decision will be made by the council.
Yeah, can you describe orders just a little bit more?
Sure. So... the word Wagros is Proto-Indo-European for hammer. So we have one order called the Order of the Wagros, which essentially means Order of Hammer, right? And that's the Norse order. So currently, the head of that order has done all kinds of stuff to further the Asatru religion in the United States. He has done immense study and taught classes and has gone far above and beyond what you would expect of anybody. And so that person was inducted into that order. So that would be an interest group. And he is free to induct other members as he so chooses. We have another order called the Order of the Horned Cauldron. So the coven's matron and patron deities are Pahusan, or Kernunos, you'll hear him called sometime. That's just a title. It means horned one. And then the matron goddess is Caradwen. So their symbols are the antlers and the cauldron. So Order of the Horned Cauldron means that you have shown exemplary service to the coven itself. That one we would discuss at the Council of Elders meetings. But Order of the Wagros, the person in charge of that order, would decide who to induct.
Do people feel that the set rituals somehow trample on their individual path?
No, because...
Don't know why, but...
Yeah, everybody has their own flavor, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we allow people to be individualistic as much as possible. So, we have one member who follows a Greek path, right, Hellenistic religion, and she has all kinds of Greek symbols on her robe and hanging off her belt. And when she does the rituals, Kernunos and Caradwen are the goddess and god, but we recognize are the matron goddess and god of our coven. Obviously, there's plenty more than that, but we recognize that that's not their only name. They go by other names too. So the person who follows Greek, we call them Pan and Hecate, which are their names there. And so it really just kind of depends on who's leading the ritual as to the flavor of the ritual, if that makes sense.
Yes. And is it always the priestesses who lead the rituals? How is that determined?
Yes. So we have degrees and we have offices. So degrees were not around, like, you know, millennia ago, but they help with people today. A lot of the stuff we do wasn't around then, but it's to kind of help people stay engaged with the coven. So after a year and a day, you are brought into the coven, you're initiated, and you are given your first degree. A year and a day after that, you're eligible to take a verbal exam, which is your second degree. And then a year and a day after that, you're eligible to take another exam, and you're given your third degree. And you can put little patches on your sleeve and stuff that signify that. Some people do, some people don't. It just kind of depends. That essentially shows who are kind of the advanced practitioners. So if someone comes in and they're new, they can look around and see who has 3 stripes on their arm. That means that person's been here forever, and if I have a question, I can ask them. Especially if I want to practice a Sathru, the Norse religion, and I see someone who has a Thor's hammer patch on their sleeve, as well as 3 stripes on their arm, that tells me they're a 3rd degree who's in the Order of the Wagros. That means they probably know a whole lot about a Sathru, and I can ask them questions. So that's degrees. So rank is, that's rank. Office is priest, priestess, high priest, high priestess. Office is responsibility. So they are the people who are responsible for performing the ritual, coordinating all of the rituals and all of the socials, and if someone needs a house cleansing, who's going to do it, who's free. They're the people that's calling everybody. If someone has a wedding, they're the people who are trying to make that happen, getting it set up. The high priest or high priestess will typically lead the ritual unless they're not present at that meeting, and then the priest or priestess will. But if so when they first show up and they have all their equipment just sit in a box on the ground, the two priests or priestesses or priest priestess, whatever they are, you know, the two lower rank, they will set everything up, right? Get the altar cloth out, put the candles on, and the bell, and the cauldron, and get all that stuff set, because that's their job. So when everyone else shows up, it's just ready, they can worship.
Question.
I apologize for being long-winded.
That's okay. Does food figure into your religious practice?
Yes. So we believe that plants have a spirit and are just as alive as animals are. So we're not vegans or vegetarians, because if we're going to say if we can't take the life of an animal because it's sacred, it's just as sacred to take the life of the corn, right? So the life of the lentil is no more important or is no less important than the life of the lamb. So we have, every time we have ritual, you know, those who can will go out to dinner afterwards, right? We'll go out and eat. We will hold feasts at the 8th Sabbaths, and we'll also hold feasts just from time to time for fun, because it's, you know, it's cool. Because that's the time we commune together, that's the time we sit and we enjoy each other's company. Every single ritual, we do a ceremony called Cakes and Ale. And that's a ceremony where we offer food to the gods and we partake of it ourselves, so we're eating with them, we're offering something and dining with them. And we do that because there is a old Proto-Indo-European word called ghosti, and it's where we get guest. Essentially, it means, like, it's almost like this for that. So, like, essentially, we eat with them. We offer them our food. We make them guests in our circle with us. Obviously, guests of honor. They're not just, you know, they are there. They're the reason we're there. But we give them these things in hopes that they will answer our prayers.
Oh, I remembered my question. If somebody wanted to join the coven who already had a lot of experience or had, like, degrees from some other coven, would they still start at, like, first degree level again?
We honor those. We'll ask them questions to make sure that they understand things in the same light, at least, that we understand them. But most of the time, it's at least close enough that they're fine. So the questions won't be things like, earlier I mentioned Tacitus of Germania. I won't ask things like, what was his book about, right? I won't ask things like that. But I will say, who's your god and goddess? What does a cauldron mean to you? What's your favorite magical tool? What spells do you like to do? I might ask things like that just to see if we're on the same page. And if we are, then you don't need your year and a day. You've already had it.
Right. Okay. Does the group own any real estate or buildings or vehicles?
I wish, but no, we don't. The Elder Coven does have a spot that we worship at every time, but that's just in someone's yard. Essentially, we have an altar set up that's permanent, and we're all family, right? So it's not like anything crazy. We all go to that family member's house and we worship around that altar in their backyard and call it a day. Everyone in their individual younger covens has to kind of work that out for themselves. So most of the time what happens is they'll either meet in a public location like a park, or they will meet in each other's homes. But for instance, the Topeka Undercoven, it was January. We had snow and we were meeting in the park outside after dark because we don't have anywhere else to go.
Right. That's hard.
Yep, because we don't collect money, so we can't have a building.
Is it okay to practice your religion indoors? Some Wiccans don't like that.
Yeah, we do. We do from time to time. So, for instance, in the older coven, we have people who are older, and they can't be outside in the heat or the cold. So, like, if it's August or January, we will be inside for their sake, because we're not going to compromise anyone's safety. We believe the gods are just as much inside as they are.
What are the economic arrangements of the group? How is money raised? You don't really have any.
Yep, we don't. Money is not raised. Sometimes people will insist on donating. So I did one house cleansing, and one person kept trying to give me money, and I kept telling them, no, you don't have to give me anything. We don't want it. Keep it. And they kept saying, no, please take it. Please take it. And so we did, and we just put that into the coven, right? So we put it into a little coffee can, essentially, and if somebody needs tarot cards, because they don't have any, we'll use that to buy it. So right now it has like less than a dollar in it. Essentially nothing. I don't think it's ever had more than $20.
How many members are currently involved?
We have about 50 almost. So all over the U.S. and in our various covens.
And how many covens are there? Do you know?
I have to count them every time. So we have Holton, we have Topeka, we have Kansas City, we have Illinois, Pennsylvania, New Mexico, and then there's one getting ready to be formed in Leonard, Kansas. And so that would be 7 total, but that one's not quite there yet. So 6.5.
Right. Is there an ideal size for a coven?
Well, our bylaws say 13. And that is, so there was this book written by a lady a while ago. She's dead now, but it was called The God of the Witches by Margaret Thatcher, I believe is her name. The book is utter crap. I mean, it's just, I don't know if she just made it up or if she, like, smoked a bunch of crack and tried to write a book. I don't know. But it was just, like, not accurate at all. But one of the things she wrote in that book was that witches always met in covens of 13. And so it's very common for covens today. Gerald Gardner, the guy who invented Wicca as it is today, the New Age version, kind of ran with it and said they had to be 13. And so a lot of covens today have 13. Well, we have 13 partly because it's popular and also because we have 3 offices in each coven. So the other 10 members, I mean, it's kind of made sense. And administratively, it's a little more difficult to run when it gets higher than that. So in our bylaws, we have a rule where if a coven hits 13, once it would go above that, one of the priests or priestesses breaks off to form a new younger coven. And that new younger coven still reports back to the older coven. It's like a hub and spoke model. So, you know, it's not like they report to the previous younger coven who reports to another younger coven who reports to, you know, and they all just kind of give feedback to the elder.
And but is it okay to have less than 13?
Yeah, we have some that are 2. Yeah. We have one of them that is 2 and one of them that is 4, I think. They had 5 but we just moved away, so
how are new members recruited?
They're not. People just show up. We have a website. Well, we don't have a website. There is a website called witchbox.com, and it lists a ton of covens. So covens will register on it, and it's free. You just put your name up there and call it a day. We have a listing on there, but that's it. And I get emails all the time. Like, I get probably 3, 4, 5 a month. I'll get emails from people.
I think 3 of the ones from Witchbox go to you.
Yes.
A bunch of different names, but they're like, the main contact is this person, and then they're like, you sent an email to all this.
Yep, that's me.
So basically, if people are interested, they just join and start their year in a day. Is there like a formal, you have to wait till there's like a group of them to start a class together?
No, they can do it right then and there. We'll, as soon as they express interest, we'll assign them a teacher who's close to them. If there are none close to them, then we would try to do it like virtually almost. So for instance, the coven in Leonard, that's some time away from us here, right? It's a bit of a distance. So it would be hard for them to drive up and meet with me every week. So instead, they come up every month for the SBAT and every 8 times a year for the Sabbaths. But every week we have a Skype class And so we all get on, and it looks like a scene from the Brady Bunch with all the cameras everywhere, and we just do our class.
Do you have any behavior codes or prohibitions?
Well, yes. So, prohibitions on things like food or alcohol? No. You can eat and drink what you want. We do think it's important to follow the law, so we stay away from drugs and that kind of thing. behavior codes. Excuse me. Behavior codes. We don't allow things like sexual harassment or murder or thievery, right? Like, all of those, anything that you would consider wrong today, we consider wrong. It's not allowed. So. But there's nothing like you have to wear purple on Tuesday or anything like that. Just don't stab people and you'll probably be fine.
All right. Are there norms and expectations for sexual behavior? No.
Not really. I mean, no. Not that I can think. I can't think of any, because we allow anyone, any sexual orientation, creed. Obviously, there's things like we would never allow any illegal sex acts, so like bestiality or sex with children or anything like that. We would report that to the police immediately. But anything else is, if it's legal, we don't care. Mm-hmm. You do what you got to do.
And are there rules regarding matters of dress or style?
Well, kind of. Not really. I mean, you wear whatever you want, but at the Coven, we do have a Coven uniform at the Coven meetings. So, historically, if you look at the Celtic religion, the Druids wore robes, and we have writings from people. I believe Pliny the Elder wrote about it, and a few other people. In Germany, there are, I think, 3 statues next to each other of Druids. Which would be, it's kind of, people wonder why there are statues of Druids in Germany, right, instead of the Celtic lands. What they don't understand is, they all come from the same root, so it would make sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
But those statues show tall, bald, bearded men in robes, so we know that they wore the robes. One person that I read a few books that talk about the color of the robes they wore and how they looked. If you read a book on Catholic history, you can see that the Catholic monk robes were the Druid robes. They adopted them so that they would look like religious people and it would be more easy for people to transfer over to Catholicism at the time. So we do wear robes. And we wear black robes because that signifies the secrecy that we have to still hide our faith and all that. It has a cord around it, and the cord is the color of your birth element. So if you're a fire, it's red, water blue, earth green, air yellow. If you're a priest, priestess, you get a sash. If you're a high priest or priestess, you get a couple of things added to the sash. But pretty much it. The only real dress code is your uniform, and not everybody wears that. So nobody cries or gets kicked out.
Fair. So are there penalties for violating rules or taboos?
Well, unless it's a law, no. If it's a law, we have in our bylaws that we'll contact the police immediately if someone breaks the law. But beyond that, no. I mean, there's not any rules to break that aren't also laws. So everyone should be fine.
Thanks. And what are the people like? Are there particularly unforgettable characters or interesting things about people that make up your coven?
Well, we have some people who are just normal, everyday people. And we have a couple who are very, very eccentric people. And we have, I mean, it's just... just your standard mix, like you walk into Walmart and see anywhere, or walk into whatever restaurant and see people around. Anyone in there could be a Coven member.
All right. Have you ever thought about leaving the group?
Nope.
Is there anything you wish you could change?
I wish I could change
in like how it runs or the,
well, not the group itself, but I wish we didn't have to be so secretive. That's the only thing I wish I could change, is that the people who are in my coven who look to me for leadership and guidance didn't have to worry about losing their jobs if someone found out what god they worship. For instance, I got an email from my ex-wife recently who told me she did not want our child participating in any kind of my religious activities at all whatsoever, and that she wanted our child raised Christian. even though I have custody of her, so it's not her decision. And I've never been closed-minded at all. If our child wants to be a Christian, that's fine. I'll take her to the people who can teach her that. But if she wants to be my religion, then she can be. I won't stop her from that either. If she wants to be something else, if she wants to be a Buddhist or a Taoist, then go for it. You know, whatever makes you happy, whatever you believe to be true. Because when that day comes and she does eventually pass away and stands before the Creator, she won't be able to say, well, I did that because my dad told me to. You know, it'll be, what religion did you choose?
How do you see the future of the group? Are you continuing to grow and change and modernize?
We are growing all the time. Like, it's ridiculous the amount that we're just exploding in growth. And, you know, coven members will be in, they'll love it, they'll think it's great, and then they'll move away and start another coven somewhere else. And it's crazy how quick it's going. So, yeah, we're going to keep growing as much as we can. And we'll still do it for as free as possible.
And for you, what have been the best and worst things about being involved with the coven so far?
Worst things would be trying to find a place for everyone to worship, because that falls to me, right? That's my job, trying to establish a coven and making sure they have somewhere to go, especially when no one wants them, you know? There have been a couple churches who have offered up their basements, and so, you know, they'll say, well, you can come, you know, we've got like a youth room in the basement, you guys can use that. So that's awesome. That's really helpful, because we don't mind. We don't believe we're going to step in there and burst into flames. We believe the Christian religion is just as valid as our own, and we would never judge them for their religion, just like, you know, they shouldn't judge us for ours. The best thing is the people that are in it. They're fantastic and helpful and wonderful people who are all trying to learn this old religion that was all but destroyed.
Anything else you feel like sharing? Any anecdotes or things we missed?
We talked about a bunch of stuff, but
yeah, pretty good.
I mean, if you got any other questions, I'll address whatever you want. I don't care.
Probably good.
All right.